Welcome to Running on Indy. I'm Jesse Davis.
And I'm Blake Robertson.
On today's show, we have LaShawn Merritt. We're Not Worthy episode. Oh my goodness. The most decorated American athlete of all time.
And he also is a pirate. He went to East Carolina, my alma mater.
So, Blake, you want to do this first plug for us before we get into our interview?
Yes, this episode of Running on Indy is brought to you by 361 Running Shoes with the all-new Meraki 2 powered by Quick Foam. So if you need another pair, or if you haven't got a pair of 361s, go to your local Runner's Forum or your local retail specialty run store.
Okay, so we're really excited today because we have one of the best all-time 400 runners ever, in LaShawn Merritt. And thank you so much, LaShawn, for being on the show today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. We had to pay him like $1 million to have him on the show.
LaShawn set up for being on this show.
Actually, he's doing it for free, which is pretty awesome. Yeah. So thank you, LaShawn.
Let me just, in case you've been living under a rock and you don't know who LaShawn Merritt is, let me go over some of your accolades. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, LaShawn. Three Olympic gold medals.
Yeah.
And then one bronze.
One bronze.
And then eight world gold medals.
Yeah, something like that.
Like three silvers. And in total, like with all the world championships, like 15 golds, three silvers, and one bronze medal.
Yeah, it's crazy because it's I talked to someone yesterday, a day before yesterday. And they were like, man, you know, you were in the Guinness Book of World Records. And I said, that for what? And I guess they have me up in there as the most decorated American.
Oh, wow.
Field, the most decorated American track and field athlete. So I guess
I was going to ask you, that sounds like the only other person I know that would even be close to that would be Carl Lewis.
That's crazy, man.
I think I ranked a lot of mine up because of the individuals and the 4x4, anchoring the 4x4. So they just keep rolling over.
Oh, yeah, man. And then, we recently were hanging out with LaShawn at a cookout. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we're real cool. And LaShawn let us hold one of these gold medals. And the weight on those things is unreal. Yeah. I couldn't believe it.
And the individual medal. One is bigger than the team medal, or is it? Or the other
no,
way
it's the same. It's the same.
I think it was just different. Yeah, it was different Olympics here. Or something.
Yep, one was at the cookout. I had one from Rio, and I had the other one from Beijing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. So, LaShawn, leading into that, what does it feel like to be the best of the world at something? Like, very few people have that experience to know that you are the best at something. Sure.
You know what, man, I contribute that, the medal, everything everybody see to just hard work. You know, it's a lot of work. It's me putting myself in the position, being disciplined enough, understanding the ability that I was blessed with and maximizing it. And in order to maximize it, there's certain characteristics I had to really sharpen as I grew in the sport. You know, I started at 18 as a pro. So it was something that I was just having fun with at first, you know, and then people told me, hey, you can be this, you can be that. And I believe it, and believing is achieving. And I put in the work. So we're putting in the work, and something inside of me, the fire kept burning. And when it was time to line up, it was just, you know, it was a feeling. Like you said, it's different than just doing something and knowing you're the best in the world at it. The best in the world is consistent and persistent, being persistent to what you want to do and continuing to learn. You know, I've been doing it for 15 years now. I'll be 33 at the end of this month, and I'm still learning.
Yeah. And you were talking about your preparation and everything, and I just thought that was insane.
like how you're working on arm swing and just like every little aspect. It was crazy.
You know, at this level, it becomes more than just running. You know, a lot of people have the ability to run. If you can walk, you can jog, you can kind of run. But at this level, it's about knowing the science and moving parts efficiently to get a certain time. You know, it's about moving parts, and you have to know how to move the parts efficient. You have to strengthen these levers and everything. So it's definitely more than just running.
Yeah, and then just listening to you talk about the 400 in general was just mind-blowing to me, because I ran a little bit of 400, not even close to you, obviously. But, like, to me, it was just, like, go as hard as you can for one lap. And I didn't think about it like you. Can you break down for us what you're going through in your head when you're professionally doing it at a high level?
It's different. I've had the luxury to be able to be one of the fastest sprinters over 200 meters.
That's right. Yeah, you were also a very accomplished 200-meter runner as well.
So with being a 400-meter, I know, okay, I have more speed than a lot of the 200 meters, especially in my earlier days. So I could get through my first 200 a lot easier than a lot of other athletes, you know, and I knew that. So it would be from the gun. My first 60, I was driving, I was doing something that I was training for in practice. I knew exactly what time I needed to hit my first 60 because I did it over and over. So I went from that, getting around the curve, from knowing how to get that slingshot effect going around the curve. Everybody don't know that or how to do that. To going on the back stretch. I've broken my race down a little different now than I did before. Before it was, I was thinking a lot. I was getting out first 60. I was doing something, getting around the curve. I would get on the back stretch. I was looking around because I was trying to judge my speed because I knew I was faster than everybody else, but I still knew I had to have something reserved for the end. It's hard to break down. I'm getting through 200. In my early days, I would come through at least 21.2 to 21 flat. Which now I came through the 200 in an Olympic race in 20.4, fastest anybody ever came through 200 in a race.
Wow.
So it's just getting, it's getting down the backstretch, thing and relax. It's a thing where you hear people say, you get on the backstretch and float. You go to like a float phase.
Yeah.
It's always been, continue to be, active. It's an active float, so you can't get too relaxed because it's almost like taking your foot too far off the gas, and if you try to push it again, you'll flood it, you know. Active float. So I went to an active floating on the back stretch, which was moving my arms but still moving fast but breathing slow. That's the trick. Like, that's hard to kind of get, run fast and breathe slow. So internally I'm moving slow, but when you see me, I'm moving fast.
Yeah.
Then at a high level, the race is in that second curve. It's what you're doing. Well, the race is the last 100, but we really start to make a move in that second curve. And then you get on the home stretch. You try to stay relaxed as possible. That monkey gonna hop on your back. We'll say, yeah, you want to talk about what's going to hop on your back. And then that last 100 is just about staying relaxed and staying focused. But all of this, when I talk, you can kind of tell it's kind of hard for me to break down because
it's probably so natural for you. You've been doing it for so long.
And it's been different. It's been different from race to race because I've had the ability to not run the same race every time and still win races.
Yeah.
But the whole thing is playing out in my head. I'm walking to the blocks. I'm already running the race in my head. I know my competitors. I know their strengths. I know their weaknesses. I know the spots on the track because I've walked them several times the day before. I know my zones. And I'm a strategic runner. You know, I'm not the runner who is really competitive. I am competitive, but a lot of my races are strategic. I plan them out based on the weather, where I am, what type of track it is. Some straightaways are longer than others. Some curves are tighter than others. So a lot go into it. There's a lot that goes into it.
Yeah, and that's incredible. That's just one lap around the track.
That's one lap.
I know, but it's so fast. And I can't believe how technical it is. When I was listening to you, it was just like blowing my mind.
Yeah, and everybody's not like that, though. That's the thing. You can see it may be 8 400-meter runners, and every person has a different strategy.
Yeah.
Just based on their strength, their weaknesses, what type of ammunition they have. Mine is my speed and my strength. I got big arms, I got speed. So I can use my arms and I use my speed.
So when you come back to Indianapolis again and hang out with Greg and everything, this yep. fool over here keeps bragging that he's never lost in a 200 meter.
I have.
We got to set that up. We got to set up so you can beat him.
Can we videotape it? Because I want my first loss to be LaShawn.
Let's do it, that we put it on the show.
Every time you talk, I've never lost a 200 meter.
I haven't. But yeah, you blow my doors off. I'm gonna say, but it would be awesome. I would love every minute of it. Or yes. not a minute of it, every, cool, like man. 30 seconds of it.
I'm with it.
Okay, so let's take a quick break to do our second 361 plug because they make the show happen. Today I am wearing the Meraki 2. It's one of my favorite all-around trainers. And what are you wearing, Blake?
I am wearing the Faisu, which me and you both are going to be wearing in our marathon coming up in about 10 days.
Yeah, Grandma's Marathon. We'll both be wearing those Faisus. I got the yellow ones. Which one are you going to wear?
I'm going to wear the yellow ones.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a great color. It matches the jersey perfect.
It does.
So you and Blake have something in common. You both went to ECU.
That's right.
Yeah.
You probably both have had Bojangles.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
ECU Bojangles. What? Me and Bill Carson. You know, me and Blake, we went to ECU and we had the same coach. I can remember eating Bojangles and Cracker Barrel with Coach.
Oh, yeah. Heck yeah.
Nice. Blake is a huge Bojangles fan. He talks about it like every podcast.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to get a sponsorship. Look, I'm also a huge Cracker Barrel fan. Me and my wife go there every Sunday. Nice. So, yeah, it's just a traditional kind of thing.
And when you were at ECU, I didn't even know this but until we started talking, but you had that breakout race at Tyson, and just you got really well known. And you got picked up really quick, so you didn't even – how long were you at ECU?
You know what? I got minute. There. It's a funny story about East Carolina, right? So out of high school, I was being recruited heavily for anywhere. I won World Juniors. I was the fastest – the number one recruit my senior year, but I only wore Nike. I wore Nike spikes, and ECU was an Adidas school. Coach Carson told me, hey man, if you come here, we'll switch our whole program to Nike for you. I signed, they switched the program. I got there in September. I ran a meet in Arkansas. It was a pro meet, but they invited me to a lane. They gave me a lane. And I won. This was probably, I got there in September. I probably ran that race in January, February, and turned pro 2 weeks before NCAA.
That's awesome.
Yep, I stayed the whole year, but then I left and moved home and started training.
So a couple things about Carson. He was, and is this one of the reasons why you chose East Carolina? Because he was... He was coaching you prior to you coming to East Carolina. Didn't he do that or have something to do with your training at all?
No, I was being coached by a guy named Dwayne Miller. What happened?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. And you said even back in high school, you guys recorded all your races, right? And watched them back afterwards?
Mm-hmm. Right afterwards. He would record. Man, when I was in high school, it was crazy. It was, I trained at school and then I would leave school and train again with this other coach.
Wow.
Weird times, like this was after high school, but with this coach, I didn't have a track at my school. It was a like asphalt track, so it was hard. So I literally would set blocks up in the school, in the hallway, and train in the halls of the school. And my senior It was a couple of us. I remember it was four of us from the 757 area who was supposed to go to East Carolina. And I was like, yo, if we go, all of us go, I'll go. Mm-hmm. So I signed and nobody else got in.
Oh, no.
Nobody
that
else.
That stinks.
Yeah, nobody got in. But me and Coach Carson developed a relationship. He told me he was going to switch it to Nike. I took all my official visits and I ended up there. You know, it was one thing. My brother passed away in 99, older brother. And
I didn't know that.
Yep. He went to Shaw University. His freshman year in college, he passed away. And it was the biggest part of me going to ECU was knowing that I was doing a sport where if I ran well, it didn't matter where I was, it was going to show. The times were going to show.
Yeah.
And the fact that I was only 2 hours away from home and my mom has just lost her her firstborn. So I didn't want to go too far away from home. And it worked out. Everything worked out. I could go home when I wanted to. I still connected with my family and I still got work done.
Yeah. Well, East Carolina, they're not no joke when it, in sprinting. Now, we're good.
We're good. And I was at that Tyson meet, and when you ran that time, everybody was like, what the hell? Like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
It was incredible.
Yep, so I do got a message for you, LaShawn. So, you know, Carson's passed away now.
Yep.
But his wife, still today, follows you.
Oh, man.
She'll say, hey, did you see what LaShawn did? He did, like, she follows you to this day. She follows you.
That's awesome.
So if you ever think about going back, definitely go back and see her. She'd really appreciate it. But yeah,
okay.
She's still a fan and follows you to this day.
Man, so. I need to reconnect with people at ECU for sure. I don't have a alumni that I can go to and visit or anything. I went to a couple schools. I went to East Carolina. Then I moved back home and I attended classes at Old Dominion. And then I went to Norfolk State for a little while so I could just train at their track and get an education there. But I don't have anywhere that I can call an alumni. So I definitely want to go back and do some stuff with them and definitely look her up because she was around. She was around when I was there.
Well, if you decide that, let me know. I can give you a contact to get up with her and all that. But yeah, another thing too, even though he ran one meet for us,
one meet, he might have ran more than one.
No, I think it was one meet.
No, I ran a whole indoor season.
Oh, okay.
A whole indoor season.
Okay.
I just turned pro right before NCAAs.
Yeah.
Well, but funny, fun fact though. So you and Chris Johnson are what people think, is white body says that. The athletes that came out of East Carolina. So when you're the two names everybody throws out.
I bet they still use you in the recruiting.
I bet
you know what? I'm gonna tell you something. When I go home to Virginia, it never fails that somebody come up to me, I'm going to ECU because you went there. I'm going to ECU. I'm like,
yep.
That's cool.
You need to be getting some kickback money for that.
You know, I need to connect with Chris because I heard Chris he lives in Florida. And I'm in Florida, and I think he's in Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be cool. That would be cool.
Yeah, yeah. You gotta get in some of the ECU commercials and get all set up. Sponsorship.
I got it. Man, Blake, go work it out.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I thought also was interesting when we were talking is about in the championship races, you talked about how you get through the rounds.
Right.
And I thought that was really cool. You just sounded like really... like you knew what was going on, and that was a huge advantage to you. Like, can you kind of go through that a little bit?
As far as how,
like, getting through the prelims to the finals and being strong for the finals.
Oh yeah, it's a process. You know, as an American, we have sort of an advantage when it comes to that, and a little disadvantage. We have an advantage because we have to go through this preliminary, semifinals, and finals system. At our nationals, you know, so I've been doing it for so long. It's something which other countries may not have that because they may not have enough people who actually have the standard to make a team. So they just have to run a time. But we have to peak twice. We have to peak at nationals or Olympic trials and then peak again at a world championship or Olympics. But it's just a matter of it's preliminary may be eight heats. It's eight heats. They take the top three out of each heat maybe to make a semifinal. So it's all about running and getting faster every round. So you have eight heats, they take top three, then you have the semifinals the next day. They may take the top two or the fastest or the first place winner and then the next couple fastest time to make the final. But the process is you just get faster every time. And it's mental because you see these people, you ran against these people, but you know, and you just ran yesterday. And then you have to come back the next day and run faster than you did yesterday. But it's the same, you know, we go through it in a collegiate system. We go through it as a elite athlete, and it gets Americans really prepared for the big show. A lot of countries don't have that system. And that's why I feel like we medal a lot when it comes to Olympic Games or World Championships, because there's a lot of countries, or a lot of people who just good at one-offs. They can run fast once, but they've never been through that process of mentally running a race. As soon as you're done, getting back, ice bath, getting dinner, making sure you're getting the proper rest, going over film for the next day. And that's a whole process.
And what I think is crazy, too, is let's say you get your team for the Olympics, you know, your top three.
Right.
Man, the guys that finished fourth and fifth that just missed out, on a good day, they could win the gold.
Yes.
In the Olympics. I mean, that's how like deep the U.S. is.
The U.S.
I mean, that's nuts.
Yeah, it's this big melting pot of athletes. We have great coaching now. The coaching, we have ex-athletes who are coaches. We have access to so much. We have access to so much here in the U.S., man. And I've been to other countries and trained in other countries. And I've seen firsthand their mentality on the sport. And we're just different. We know we're in a place where the talent level can be equal. The talent level is, there may be 100 people with the same talent as me, but it comes down to who's going to put in the work, who's going to get the details, who's going to get enough rest and recovery, who's going to learn the most, who's going to understand it, and who is going to put in the work to be the best in the world and stay the best in the world. And that's talent, that's a gift, but that's an individual who is something deeper than just having talent.
So tell the audience, somebody like yourself who's the best in the world, what is a typical day for you? I know everything's different, but just kind of give us a typical day for a training day that you do, starting from the morning all the way to at night.
Yeah, I'll let you know right now I'm in a cycle. It changes throughout the season because you have different cycles. You have your loading phase earlier, then you get into more race specific stuff, and then you start winding down and getting ready for competition. But right now my schedule is I get up at 7, I eat a little bit, I got my boiled eggs, maybe some oatmeal, banana. I'm at the gym at 8. I'm at the gym at 8, from 8 to 9:30, sometimes 10. I leave there, I go straight to the therapy because I'm dealing with an issue right now. But I go to therapy, let me not call it therapy, let me call it treatment.
Yeah.
Because I'm going there to get treatment. And also working on different muscle stability stuff. So now it's 12 o'clock. I get back home. I got to drive 30 minutes back home. I eat, shower.
No Bojangles, right?
No Bojangles.
No Bojangles. Yeah. He's in a good training cycle.
I was trying to say that's right the secret now, man, Bojangles.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry, go ahead.
For lunch is usually... it's usually some pasta, some salad, chicken salad, something like that. That's at 12. So from 12 to 3, I have a gap where I rest. Then I may get up at 3 something. I'm at the track at 4:30. the track from 4:30 to about 6:30, sometimes 7. It just depends, because sometimes my coach will talk 30 minutes before we even start. Yeah, but it's school. I like it because we're learning. So now it's 6:37. I drive 30 minutes back home, shower, stretch down, do a little core. Now it's 8 o'clock. So I got up at 7 and I don't get home till the end of the day to really wind down all the way until 8. So it's a full day. It's gym, treatment, rest, track, back to stretching and everything, home, then bed, then you do it all over again.
Yeah, and all just to run one lap.
All to run one lap. And sometimes it's a half a lap. It's on 200.
Yeah, 200. I keep forgetting about 200.
You know, it takes a lot of discipline to do that, though.
Because you work
longer than a normal hour, 8 hours.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You're doing something, like, all the time.
Yeah, that's what you got to do to be the best in the world. Yeah. That's what it takes.
No, and there's no instant gratification. You know, So I have to do this for months and months and months and months before I even run one race.
Yeah.
Tough part. But you learn it. You know, it's work. I've made the best out of it. And I'm continuing to learn. And through that, you're looking at film. It's so much. People may not say, you may talk to somebody else and it may not be as much to them. You know, or the schedule may not be as strict. But for me, I understand I've been the best in the world for a long time. And I understand the discipline, focus, and rest that it takes.
Well, if you're not doing it, the guy that's trying to beat you is doing it.
You're doing it.
Yeah. So you gotta
I gotta stay on top of it, man.
Well, shoot, I was gonna talk to Greg. He's gotten a couple positions open up at DCL, but it doesn't sound like you haven't any time to do that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm doing with Greg, man, the plan is to connect with Greg, and I own trucks myself now, you know, but eventually I think I do want to be that broker and open that business like Greg has in my area, you know, and he's all for it. He understands what I understand. He know that I understand discipline, focus, hard work, dedication. I dot my I's and cross my T's. I've had longevity in this sport, and longevity don't come from just being talented and just having a gift. You know, this longevity, this 15 years has come from a lot of discipline, hard work, and focus, mm-hmm. You know, and I feel like if I applied that to anything in that formula, then success will be the outcome.
Yeah. And so what is next for you, LeSean, like as far as running?
Yeah, I'm actually running in Boston. This Sunday. They have a 200-meter street race.
Oh, sweet.
Whoa, 200-meter street race.
200-meter street race. They put this platform in the middle of the street, and they put a track, lay a track over it. And I've been having some issues this year with my foot a little bit and getting around the curves. So my agent texted me and told me they have a 200-meter street race. And if I want to start getting some more meets in, I say I'm with it. So I'll be in Boston this Sunday.
Hey, maybe it'll be net downhill.
Yeah.
You can break 40 seconds.
For 200.
No, it's 200
meters. 2 minutes.
No, break.
I hope he breaks 40 for 200.
I'm sorry. Break 19 seconds.
19 seconds. Going for
the world record is what? 19.
19. Yeah, but this is just fun. They're doing it's an Adidas meet. They switching it up a little bit, just having some street races. This is my first year actually going to this meet. So it should be cool. I'm just looking forward to having some fun with it and getting healthy. You know, I'm not all the way healthy like I want to be, but I'm working on it daily, and I'll go out I'm ready to get some competitive juices flowing. So I told her, put me in.
You ready for the next Olympics then? You going gearing for that?
You know, I am. This year is a major year within the sport. It's a world championship year. I'll play it by how healthy I am. But obviously, the biggest thing for me is if I want to, if with continuing to do this and invest in myself like I am, is to get back to that Olympic Games and show off.
Now, do you do things differently now that you're 23 versus when you were 21, 22?
Well, he's 33.
I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
33. You have to do things differently now than you did, let's say, 10 years ago.
There's not a lot that has changed for me as a person and my focus and everything. The biggest thing that's changed is knowing that I have a little more wear and tear in the body, such as being proactive, knowing that the older I get, that you lose elasticity, so stretching more, a lot more. Knowing that the older you get, you kind of lose the sensory proprioceptors in your feet the older you get. So more of your foot hits the ground. So it's just, okay, I'm getting older. I need to strengthen my feet more. I need to make sure I stretch more. And then just dealing with life, you know, the older you get, the older I've gotten, the more life has showed itself, you know, personal life, just life in general. So just trying to stay focused within the sport, but at this age, also trying to get together what my life is going to be, because this has a lifespan. You know, it's my body is what drives the sport. So my mind is going to be sharp. So it's focusing and then having those extra time to take calls and figure out what I want to do in the next chapter of my life, but still having the fire as a rookie, but having the mentality as a vet.
I think you're gonna do just fine. If you got the drive to be the best in the world, you'll be fine.
One thing that I also thought that was interesting when you were talking about is you said a lot of times you were running to win races and not necessarily pop out big times.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, because I when I first started, it was Jeremy Warner who was really dominating. So it was, how can I beat this guy? How can I strategically figure out what he's doing and what I'm doing? Because it wasn't about running crazy times. You know, it was, okay, this is a career. I want to have longevity in this career. So let me win races and get to the next race. You know, it wasn't about trying to exert myself all the way in every race. And I didn't have time bonuses at first. So I wasn't, if I ran 44 flat or 45 flat, if I won the race, I won the race.
Yeah.
Just get ready for the next one. And that was the thing early on. And now it's kind of, I'm older. I think I'll pick and choose races. I ran a lot in my career. I'm one of the guys, if you ask any track and field athlete in 400, I'll be at a big Diamond League race on Saturday. And then Tuesday, I'm at a small meet, still getting the money from the smaller meet. And then I'm traveling on the next Saturday at a meet in Taiwan where people show up and they think it's just going to be a low key meet, but I'm there. And they're like, yo, why are you here? Even anything on the table. I feel good, you know, I'm young, so let me just run. But now with older, I can't run as much, you know, so I'm choosing now. And then when I do run, once I really, really get healthy, when I do run, just really lay it out. Just go and just lay it out and start trying to get those times. Because let me tell you something, right now, I feel like a lot of athletes are running four times. You know, they're putting themselves out on social media or Instagram, and they're showing their training. They're saying what they're gonna do when they get places, whatever. It's so much, and I feel like they're using it, and they're having an extra chip on their shoulder when it's time to compete. It's not just about, oh, I want to beat this person. It's like, I put it out there, you know. So I got to give this extra, which I didn't have at first. You know, it was just, okay, we having fun, we running to win. But these athletes now are running fast, and I think they're putting themselves out there. And it's an extra, it's like extra motivation for them. And I see that. And
if they don't do it, they're going to get eat up by the media or anybody else.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. It's two parts to it. You know what I mean? You have to be strong enough to put that out there. And if you don't run well, show up in the next race and still know that you have what it takes to win.
Yeah. And as we were talking too, I got the impression that you were maybe a little more laid back than some other guys. And you think that kind of helps you out a little bit?
Yeah.
Like as far as like relaxed, you know?
I think so. I think just in general, 400 meter guys are a little more relaxed than a lot of sprinter and distance guys, because you know, that 400, you have to have the best of both worlds. You have to be relaxed, but you also have to have some adrenaline, you know? Yeah. So I think it's that race where, and a lot of 400 meter runners are kind of just relaxed. But me, I'm just that person anyway. You know, I show up, I'm not fierce. It's inside. I got a fire burning inside. But with being strategic, I can't get too congested in my head of too many things. It's, I'm here to do a job. I've worked hard at it. I've spent time. I've looked at film. And I want to be the best. And I've worked to be the best. So now it's time to line up. Just give it what I got. And it's not just racing. It's actually being a 400 meter specialist. That's what it comes to be able to be, continue to be the best in the world, be the number one in the world year after year. You have to become a 400 meter specialist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I got a few like real quick ones to kind of wrap up.
Yeah.
Favorite Olympics?
My favorite, definitely Beijing. I won 2 golds there. In Beijing, Angelo Taylor was my roommate. So he went out and won the 400 meter hurdles. And my final was the next day. I won the 400 meters. And then we both won gold on the 4x4. So that was amazing.
I thought you might say Beijing.
I thought he was going to say Tokyo.
Tokyo. Coming up.
Right.
And I've always been curious, is the Olympics as crazy as they say with all the athletes, or
you know what,
I hear it's crazy in the Olympic Village,
but the crazy ones aren't getting medals. I'm in my
room. Are the people that are just excited to be there,
right? I don't even have time to be crazy, and the last event of the whole thing is the
I forgot you closed it off.
Yeah, I closed the show.
Oh, that's right. I mean, you can't even do anything.
You ain't got time to go visit the Swedish volleyball team or anything like that.
I see a lot of people just in the cafeteria, but that's it. I'm from there. I'm there, the track, in the treatment room, and then back. So
I didn't think about the 4x4 is the grand finale.
Look, and this is why I'm not where you're at, because if I made the Olympics,
besides talent,
if I made the Olympics, I'd want to lose the first round, and then I'd be partying the rest of the week. Next 2 weeks.
They party though. I mean, they have condom baskets.
That's crazy.
You hear about all kind of stuff.
That's crazy.
And biggest all-time rival.
Biggest all-time rival, Jeremy.
Me and Jeremy. I thought you might say that.
We used to go at it, man. It was all fun. I've seen him recently. We talked, and that was fun. That was some fun.
Those were some good battles.
Those were.
Yeah, and you knew USA was going to come out on top, so that was good. Although we were pulling for you.
I was too. I like Jeremy Warner. I like Jeremy Warner, but he never smiled. I'm like,
And you were always smiling. You look like you had more fun.
You know, his mentor, it was with his mentor being Michael Johnson, it was a lot business. It was business. Mike was a business type of guy. He would show up. Michael didn't play around a lot. He was just boom, boom, boom. And Michael was Jeremy's mentor at the time. So they did the same things, but it kept them focused.
Do you got any more questions, man?
That's all I got, man.
Yeah, I think we're good. That was awesome.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, everyone. We're going to wrap this up. Thank you for listening today. And just so you know, we are now available on Google Play and Spotify in addition to iTunes, which is pretty awesome. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And if you could, rate our show. Give us 5 stars. Make some comments. Only 5 stars, though, right?
Yeah, nothing less than 5 stars are worth sending LaShawn after you.
Yeah, oh, yeah, and you will not outrun LaShawn.
No, you're done.
Yeah, he has got you. And then also, we want to thank Village Recording Studio here in Broderpole, Indiana. And Brian Wheat makes the magic happen. And you can, if you want to do your own podcast, come and see it. Or come and see Brian, and he'll take care of you and make it sound pretty incredible. All right, ready? Remember to keep running on Indy. Yeah, thank you, LaShawn.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Thank you so much. That was awesome.